The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Nathan Ross, CPA, and it's Cybersecurity Sunday once again. We had such an outpouring of questions and approvals after last week's show. I've decided that to the extent Mr. Win-Win can make it be available consistently, sure makes it easier on Nathan on Sunday morning, so we're going to continue to do it. Let's see what our agenda shows for us today. We're going to talk about several things that pop up in, probably your everyday life, whether you're corporate or, most of these things, I guess, will happen across corporate environments. On the other hand, corporate environments are more aware than perhaps people sitting at home using their Gmail or Yahoo or whatever they use. But in any event, I asked Wynn to develop a talk, if you will, on how to spot a phishing attack. And I tell you, it seems like it's every day I get efforts to find out something about me. I can't remember. This week I had somebody, of course, wanting bank information so they could send a bunch of money to me. Normally, Gmail does a pretty good job of sorting those out to spam. And my gosh, if you ever look at your spam folder, you'll croak thinking about the chances that you could fall prey. And thankfully, the rest of the world has grammatical struggles when it comes to English, so that, you know, the dead giveaway is missing words or misspelled words, etc. But anyway, well, Wynn, we're glad to have you back today. And I forgot our disclaimer. Just like prior weeks, I want to make sure you understand that, you know, we're trying to help you with some education. We hope it's entertaining, although I don't classify it as entertainment like some of the other real estate shows do. And we may or may not talk about real estate today. We're going to see how long this discussion goes. But even with respect to cybersecurity, I'm going to tell you, you need to consult with experts before you start doing whatever it is you think you're going to do, whatever you read about somewhere online or you saw on YouTube. A lot of great ideas out there. I know I use YouTube a bunch with the real estate work and the tax work that we do. But, you know, it's kind of like using Google Maps. If you don't have some idea of where you're going, good luck if you're relying on Google Maps 100% to get you there. And I've learned, for certain in a city the size of Bangkok, where there's multiple ways of getting anywhere, you better have some idea. Take a taxi the first time. See how the taxi gets there, and that'll be something for you to emulate. But, Wynn, welcome to the show again, and what are we going to talk about today?
Well, thank you, Nathan, for another opportunity in this Sunday. And today I want to talk about phishing, and the term we heard all the time, but I just want to reiterate what it means. So phishing is a definition of sending email a message purportedly in order to induce individual to reveal personal information like password, credit card numbers, and things as such.
Hey, why don't you spell phishing first? I think we assume everybody knows what that means and how it's spelled and that kind of thing.
Okay, well, it's not like fish, like we're fishing.
It's not like a trot line.
No, it's
right?
not a trot line.
Although
no.
It kind of is like a trot line from the other end.
You know
right?
what? For the first time when I heard that phishing, that's what I thought too,
yeah.
to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But no, phishing is P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G.
Okay.
Not phishing, like F-I-S-H, right?
Right.
So anyway, so today's topic, we want to talk about like security awareness. And the purpose is we know about it, but how do you detect, how do you spot the phishing email when it comes to you? And I'm telling you right now, it's happening all around the country that people still click on the link even though you train them because the bad guy circumvents.
It's like having a Christmas present under the Christmas tree. And you can't wait to get it open.
They
right?
are playing with your behavior,
yeah.
right? And that's exactly what they do. That's whole objective is they're playing with your behavior, okay? So some of the things that I want to talk about is how to spot a phishing attack like a pro, okay? The word is like a pro. It's like how, for myself, how would I detect it? And some of the things we talk about is, look, like, I'm going to go over to the topic real quick, the highlight, like the sender email address, the greeting and the signatures, and the urgency or the threatening languages, and the scrutinize, the content, examining, the attachment is the worst one. We go
what,
to that
what
later.
Do you, oh, okay, we'll come back to that because I've got a couple questions.
And then
that.
The ART requests. Okay. Okay. And then all, but go ahead. I'll let you ask you.
Well, on scrutinizing, well, no, let's see. It was analyze greeting and signature. Well, let's start with the first one, the sender's email address. If it's ever an @ and then non-corporate type domain, like in my case, npross.com, is our domain. That said, I use Gmail a lot because one thing I've learned is, and this unfortunately works against a lot of users, is most people would open a Gmail address email that might not open a corporate one. And I find that it's the antithesis of what you might think. And I've got a product that allows us to do group or batch email merges, and they specifically run that from your Gmail account, and they maintained that they've done studies where the email's far more likely to get open. It's kind of like a handwritten name and address on an envelope, on a letter. Are you more likely to open that or one that's got a label on it or it's typed, right? And
well,
so that's a big issue that I notice, and yet when that email address is, 180 characters long and maybe 6 segments and then it ends @ Gmail, you can rest assured that's probably an attempt to extract your money away from you because most people, my Gmail account, it's npross@gmail. It's not anything long and,
Well, if you look at something, it depends on the context of the email, right? If the email comes from something like financials and you look at the sender came from Gmail, you have to question yourself, why are they using a Gmail?
Right.
Gmail's a right. Gmail, Hotmail, and Yahoo. Those are the things you need to scrutinize every time you receive
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they're free.
No, they're free. That's the problem, right? And Gmail also have a paying service. You have to pay for the spam filter. But here's the thing. Okay, they did a great job of some, but don't take one time. One time.
Oh, I know. And the one I mentioned came in this past week. It went through, apparently, the spam filter, and yet my eyes filtered it. And when I saw missing words and misspelled words, it's like, well, I was thinking, well, how did that get past Gmail? So it had some type of authentic nature, I guess, where Gmail looked at it and said, oh, let's let it go.
Well, I'm going to show you a little trick, okay?
Uh-huh.
Don't look at the actual email, for example, like NathanRoss@gmail or look at the alias name. Okay, the alias name is just the name. It looked very legit, like Nathan, right?
Look at the replies.
Look at the actual email.
Okay.
But it can come by Nathan@xyz.zxy. Those are the true email, not the alias email. That's just a name. And most people using their phone, sometimes you look at your phone, it's different when you look from your computers.
Yeah.
And you notice, when you look at your phone, you don't see a lot of contacts, right? So people just click on it without looking at the actual email. That's what gets them in trouble, okay? But one thing you can do is, I'll tell you more later, you can always, if you suspect it's a fake email or spam email, move it to the spam folder. Then you can highlight it. You can click it all day long. You won't do any damage.
Oh, is that right? So, okay, and I was going to ask you,
yeah.
Many times I've been tempted, and I never have, but I've been tempted because they were such outrageous suppositions, I guess, or prepositions offering me something or wanting, I've been tempted to reply and carry the conversation about. Never done it. But if you did that, you would want to execute it from the spam folder, you're saying?
Yes.
And including opening attachments? I've never opened attachments, to my knowledge.
You can open all day long, but you won't do anything because it will stop right there. But it also, all you have to do is highlight it. You will see the email thread. You can see, like, you know right away it's spoofing. You know right away it's not legit.
Yeah.
And next time we can dive into it, and I can explain to you even further. Okay?
Okay.
But there's a lot that's going on right now, but also the targets, too, who they send it to. So now they know that we are aware of that, right? So right now, you know who, you know, really sad? You know who they're targeting? They're targeting seniors.
Yeah.
It's a growing elderly. It's a growing crisis right now.
It ought to be in the category of elder abuse is what it should be.
And these people get away with that. And I heard so many stories that the elder just bankrupt, basically just emptied the bank account because of these people that using spam email. Okay.
Yeah.
So some of the thing here that we want to talk about, I want to help, you know, people that be aware of it, what's going on out there. You know, when nowadays, you know, when it comes to security, you have to be the fox and the lion at the same time.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
And you really, you know, you want to assume that, you know, good people have sent you emails, right? I mean, I've never knowingly given my email address to a hacker, right? So anyway, hey, let's do this. We're right on top of the first break. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll return with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little more.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross. Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. Big dreams and fantasies, and there are many just like me
with big dreams and fantasies.
Welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We hope you enjoyed the segment we replayed from last Sunday's show. I believe it was last Sunday with our cybersecurity expert, Mr. Nguyen Nguyen. And yes, you heard me correct. The first name is identical to the last name. And Mr. Nguyen is... been doing cybersecurity for a long time because there's been hackers for a long time, and he does it at a very high level. So in any event, he will be with us again this coming Sunday, and I think for the foreseeable future, it's up to him. 7 a.m. comes awfully early on Sundays, but if you're interested in not just corporate espionage when it comes to cyber, tune in. The last show was with respect to phishing, and that's an issue that we all confront. But in any event, let's go back now to the economy and how it affects real estate. And as you know, the big R word has raised its head. That would not be rate cut, that would be recession. And there's significant concern now that that's where we're headed. We've had quite a few layoffs here over the past month and a half. People that are a lot smarter than you and I, or at least than I, like Jamie Dimon, the CEO and I believe he's chairman of Chase Bank. There's an article that came out earlier today that crossed my radar that says Dimon still sees a 65% chance of a recession. This is what he first indicated he thought was going to happen back, I believe it's only been a couple months ago. I've got the article out in our news page. And by the way, I apologize. I am woefully behind on my article updates. I will try to do better here over the next couple days and get caught up on that. So in any event, apologize again. But and when I read through a little bit of this article, you know, this was a conversation he had with CNBC here. It was, I guess, either yesterday or earlier today. I suppose this article could be real time. Today is the 9th, and that's when it was posted. But the world is pricing in a soft landing at a probably 70 to 80%. He said at the time, this goes back to March. So March is when he predicted the recession was a higher or was a high likelihood. But in any event, he thinks that the chance of a soft landing in the next year or two is half of that 70-80% rate. The worst case would be stagflation, and he puts the odds of a recession at around 65%. Diamond has been bearish about the U.S. economy for some time, warning in 2022 that a hurricane was about to hit the U.S. economy. Further, he hadn't been impressed by economic indicators since the pandemic, which he thought distorted their accuracy and now required a grain of salt. His view clashes with others, including those of his own bank, J.P. Morgan Chase economists, led by Mr. Bruce Kasman, had thought as of the start of July that the chance of a U.S. recession was 25%. They increased that to 35% earlier this week and passed that information on to clients in a note. As Bloomberg reported, the modest increase in our assessment of recession risk contrasts with the more substantial reassessment as we are making, or assessment we are making to the interest rate outlook, Cashman told his colleagues. But in any event, you know, I was hopeful that we were kind of rising over the noise in the economy, I guess the ecosphere, but it'll be interesting to see what the next couple months of employment indicators and other GDP reporting. And it affects articles like this next one. Again, came out today on GlobeStreet.com. U.S. to add record number of apartments this year. More than 500,000 new apartments are expected to be completed this year, an increase of 9% over 2023 and 30% from 2022. And I want you to understand the nuance there. 9% over 2023. 2023 had a lot of deliveries, more than 2022. So the fact that it sounds like, well, gee, you know, 30% greater than 2022, that's got to be even more than 9% of 2023. I don't think so. I don't have the numbers on 2022 and 2023, but I know the first half, at least, of 2023, there were a lot of new deliveries into the market to the point where the absorption rates have really suffered here over the past, well, right at a year since mid-2023. Let's see. New inventory is enough to house the entire population of Atlanta, with 60% of new apartments coming to market in just 20 of the metros, the larger cities, in other words, according to a study by Rent Cafe, I believe, is where I saw that. Construction is likely to slow next year, with more than half of the 370 markets studied expected to see a decelerated pace of activity. Apartment deliveries may surge again in 2028, the report said. Well, that's, I guess, to be expected in that, you know, when you start the ball rolling on developing apartments, it's hard to, you can't just cut it off. You know, there's a period of catch-up, I guess you might say. And, you know, it'll be felt, I guess, here in end of 2024 and on for 2 or 3 years, what it sounds like this study has concluded. Construction is likely to slow down next year, with more than half of the 370 markets studied expected to see a decelerated rate of activity. Apartment deliveries may surge again in 2028. Continuing on, the top market for apartment construction is New York for the third year in a row, with nearly 33,000 new units expected to become available this year. Brooklyn is playing a key role in this growth, adding three times more units this year than Manhattan. New York Metro's apartment construction boom stems from the Northeast persistent housing shortage. Texas was a surprise chart topper in second place, with Dallas expecting to add only a handful fewer units than New York. That's amazing, and it's going to be problematic, I think, the absorption rate in Dallas, and I'll try to look that up here momentarily. Boy, that's going to create a tenant market, quote-unquote. Austin, even worse, is expected to add 21,500 units. Together, these two markets will account for nearly 10% of all new apartments in the United States in 2024, the study found. Dallas' consistent population growth, business-friendly environment, affordability compared to similar-sized metros, and strong infrastructure are all attractive for companies and construction projects. I didn't see their strong absorption rate pop up there. Let me see if I can find I was going to see if I can find my report on Dallas. Let's see here. I believe I've got it here. Well, let me do this. I do have it here on my system, but let me move on, and I'll come back to it when we take a break. I'll go pull it up. Phoenix secured the fourth spot with an estimated 20,000 new apartments, 20,141 new apartments expected to open across the metro area before the end of 2024, and Atlanta rounded out the top five with 18,520. Again, I would tell you that for these apartments to be coming onto the market now, they likely were started in early 2023 when things were still hot and heavy, I guess you might say, in the apartment market. By 2028, this is a striking number, by 2028, 2 million apartments are set to come online despite uncertainties in most markets that are causing fewer new projects to start. That's significant. I mean, if you think about what we just saw with people like Intel laying off, what was it, 15 or 20,000 employees, and there's others. I just find it amazing that this 2 million apartment number can happen. And I wonder when they say the 2 million apartments are set to come online, I wonder at what point in the production timeline those projects are, because I just can't fathom, if I were building, these are high end. I mean, these are not, quote, workforce housing, I don't think. I guess some of them could be, but good for the tenant, I guess. If you're a tenant, boy, this is your, the planets are aligning for you, because you're going to see concessions, I'm assuming, right and left. I'll give you that number, too, when I pull up the Dallas report. And I may have Atlanta handy as well. But in any event, high-end apartments continue to dominate new developments as borrowing costs and economic uncertainty are causing developers to reevaluate their strategy or strategies, leaving renters in some markets with limited affordable, quote-unquote, options, said Rent Cafe. Even with apartment construction reaching a new peak in 2024, higher borrowing costs are affecting the multifamily sector, prompting many developers to adjust their strategies for the coming years toward lower risk projects and markets with strong demand and job growth. Let's see here. Well, I think that's enough on that topic. And again, I'll grab the absorption numbers here momentarily and we'll come back to that. But let me move on to a couple other articles, I believe, that were from the same site. Globe Street is one of our better sources for multifamily news. Let's see here. Well, I may have seen that on a week or so ago. Let me back up and take a look at a couple other sites that we get this info from. Let's see here. Connect CRE is another site that I like to keep track of. They've got, between them and Globe Street, you can pretty much keep up with everything going on across the country. I struggle with the smaller type size on on Connect CRE, but hey, I've got an Apple, so we can deal with that. But anyway, ignore the headlines. This looks interesting. Came out a couple days ago or a day ago. A wave of distressed deals likely won't happen. Well, let's see which markets they're talking about there. Maybe it's good news for your area or our area. Let's see. This is a Marcus & Millichap sourced article. Marcus & Millichap's John Chang said an experienced real estate investor sent him an article touting alarming news. Specifically, multifamily distress had nearly tripled in 6 months between January and June of 2024. And the investor asked me if this is the wave of distressed deals that's finally coming. Well, you know, we feel like here on Be a Planner, we do believe there's considerable distress left in the multifamily market. However, what you've seen for the first 6 months of 2024, I rather doubt is anywhere near the end, or actually near the beginning of what's coming. I mean, there's some debt refinancing that has to occur here in late 2024 and 2025, and that's when I suggest you're going to see true distress. When you've got a three-year bridge loan that's coming due, and there was a wave of three-year bridge debt that was used in 2021 and 2022 that's coming up for refinance and or extensions, which have to be approved, you know, by the lender and aren't free. Most of them have a 1% per year extension fee, which that's not insignificant in most cases. You know, you have a $100 million property. Well, obviously that's $1 million. So, or 50 million is 500,000. That's a large amount of money to part with. If you're not able to get a refinance done, you probably don't have that kind of money sitting in the till, you know, to pay out. But in any event, the source of the angst that's felt in some corners of the industry is a recent report from Cred IQ. That's CRED, and that must stand for commercial real estate distress, I suppose. I don't see that spelled out. But the distress rates excuse me, had increased 185% from January to June, or the period January to June, up to 7.4%, while the overall rate had climbed to 8.62% for all commercial real estate. So multifamily is finally getting its dose of the bitter pill or the bitter medicine that office has seen. But I would still suggest to you it's not quite the end of the world. I mean, the sky is not falling. There's still significant demand for the multifamily product. But in any event, Chang with Marcus & Millichap pointed out that the definition of distress in data includes performing and non-performing matured debt. Basically, loans that have come due, but where the owner is still likely negotiating with the lender, and I suspect making some form of payment, are included. Also within that data grouping are current special service loans. Furthermore, just because the property is technically in distress doesn't mean it will come out to market as a foreclosure or at a significantly discounted fire sale. On the other hand, lenders are starting to clear their balance sheets, seeking to sell off loans that could pose a higher risk. Chang said that some of that includes poorly performing office buildings and weaker retail properties. It appears that banks are offering much less forbearance and they're holding owners' feet to the fire on properties in well-performing categories. Chang said adding that these properties include industrial, some retail types, medical, office, and apartments is what he's classifying as well-performing categories. It's not time to panic. Despite the maturities and a shift in lender strategy, Chang said the following points to a somewhat more positive outlook. The following points to somewhat more positive outlook. Delinquency rates, number one, delinquency rates are low compared to historical standards. Delinquency rates for the office sector were 10.4% in 2012. Recent reports put office delinquency rates at 7.6%. I'm not sure that's true in the Houston market where our vacancies, I don't think, unless it's improved a lot lately, it's the worst it's ever been, worse than even the mid-80s, which goes back a long way, but that was, I believe, the low watermark previously. But he said recent reports put office delinquency rates at 7.6%, and about par with where it was in 2017. Additionally, delinquency rates stand at 2.4% for apartments for the moment, 0.6% for industrial, and 6.4% for retail. Again, I am thinking the apartment market by this time next year will have seen some major delinquencies. Failure to be able to refinance is essentially the issue. Second point, interest rates are decreasing. Chang said the 10-year treasury rate is around 4.25%, down from 4.7% approximately 3 months ago and 5% from October 2023. Additionally, the Fed Reserve is signaling a likely rate cut this year, especially as inflation continues to move to the Fed's 2% target rate. I'm not sure. I hope that's the way inflation continues to move. If we keep having companies like Intel cut 15,000 to 20,000 employees, I suspect we may get there, but boy, anything but a soft landing. But anyway, Chang acknowledged the potential of headwinds, but it does look like we're through the worst of it and the market is beginning to turn. Okay, well, take that, consider the source. I mean, Marcus and Millichap is in the sales business, and I'm not saying they're intentionally misleading. I'm just saying they're looking at the same elephant I am, and they're coming up with a scenario that's a lot rosier than what I understand will happen when the large majority of these bridge debt loans comes due. Now, you know, the owners, the current owners or syndicators may be able to sell them and salvage some value, but, you know, it remains to be seen. In any event, let's see. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll return here momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to nathan@npross.com, nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I've found my May of 2024 report on Dallas. I've got another one more current, but I don't think we've put it into the right repository that I can access from here. But in any event, the numbers aren't going to be that far off. And in fact, this may even be a better view. But in the Dallas market, occupancy was 89%. The average price was, is this dollars per month? Yes, it is. Was $1,468 for an average apartment. Rental rate works out to $1.66 a foot. That's for an 885 average size unit. The rental growth rate is negative 4%. The units absorbed in raw numbers were about 15,000. The operating supply there is up to 872,000 apartments. Units under construction. So this is what would feed into the numbers I mentioned earlier. 35,409. Units proposed for construction, 80,615, and units recently opened, 30,185. So let's see, the percent, the absorption percentage, well, let's see, that we broke this down by the submarket. I'll just tell you, the Far South Dallas slash Waxahachie is the hottest market there. Second would be Richland Hills, Fossil Creek. But you're talking about an annualized growth percentage of almost 10%, 9.9% in the Far South Dallas and Waxahachie. By comparison, let's see, do I have my Houston numbers? Yeah, the rental growth rate in Houston's a minus 1.4%, so it's not quite as pressed. The number of units absorbed in Houston was right at 12,000, so Dallas doing a little bit better on the absorption front. But, you know, when you consider the number of people renting in the Dallas market, it's pretty amazing that, you know, we had that many units. I would say, well, I guess it works both ways. The concessions, let me see if I have the concessions handy on this May report. Let's see. Yeah, here we go. So in Dallas, altogether, the concession rate concessions have been made on 39% of the total units. It looks like they're in the somewhere in the 6% range. So, you know, it's somewhat significant. I mean, if you do the math, you'll find that's more than coffee money, right? But, you know, hey, the best piece of real estate in the world is the one that's got a rent-paying tenant on it. So I would tell you concessions in this type of market are almost secondary. But in any event, you know, we are seeing opportunity. I plan on this Sunday show. Well, I'll probably wait till next Thursday since we've got the cybersecurity gentleman coming back. But there are new syndications coming to market. Numbers look, they're not quite, the pro forma data isn't quite what we were seeing in the good old days, you know, what, 2 and 3 years ago. But the market is accommodating syndication much better now than the last 12 to 18 months, let's say. And there's a couple groups that focus here in the Houston market that and one of them doesn't originate here. They originate out of New York, and they focus on Texas and specifically Houston and Dallas. And they've got two transactions that they're trying to get closed here by September. So in any event, for those of you that might not be accredited investors, this group does both the 506B category, which is for non-accrediteds, and they've got a 506C transaction, which accommodates only accrediteds. And the 506B, to be clear, accommodates both accrediteds and unaccredited or non-accredited, as the case may be. But there's a 35 partner limit or investor limit on non-accrediteds. And if you don't understand this terminology, you need to, and we'll do our best to help out on the air. We're also finally getting ready to get out of the gate on some training, webinar-based training, probably also in person. So, for those of you that might be interested in that, send me an email to Nathan@npross.com or send it to info, if that's easier to remember, @npross.com. And I'll let you know once we schedule time and place. But we'll probably do it both here in Houston. We'll also do it in San Antonio for those of you that want to do a relaxing road trip. We've got a lot of good stuff going on in San Antonio. And we'll try to make it as low cost as we can. And we'll also include a lodging component if you want to stay at one of our properties. We do fully furnished short-term rentals or temporary housing, as the case may be. And you ought to come make a staycation out of it. Come stay a couple days and go see the missions. You know, we have the World Heritage Foundation site now that, UNESCO is the organization that designates historically significant spots in the world. And San Antonio was fortunate enough to have the five missions that start with the Alamo downtown and end up south of Loop 410. I think it's La España, if I'm saying that correctly. My Spanish listeners are probably rolling out of their chairs right now. I don't speak Spanish. I speak more Thai than I do Spanish, because where I live most of the time. But I am in country now, so if any of you want to take me to lunch, you're welcome to do so, and we can discuss some of your particulars as we dine. In any event, thank you for listening in today. I think we're here at the end of the show, and we will be back. Well, let's see, we got a couple minutes, it looks like. We will be back on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on AM 700 KSEV. And if any of you are seeking tax, real estate tax specifically, planning or compliance work, or you are interested in investing but you don't understand the voluminous documents that you will have placed in front of you, we excel at helping you understand what you're signing up for and then maintaining. If you invest your retirement funds in these transactions, we'll help you maintain the reporting that's necessary, and we'll also assist you with converting your pre-tax funds over to Roth, which is a big deal in the areas we find ourselves now in the economy and the projected deficit problems at the federal and state level. In any event, we thank you for listening in, and we will be back on Sunday again at 7 a.m. Right here on KSEV, The Voice of Texas. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.